Two features of a recent procurement at the Department of Health and Human Services are an example of procurement jujitsu. That's the term Steve Kelman attaches to the work of HHS Chief Technology Officer Brian Civic. Steve is Professor of Public Management at Harvard Kennedy School of Government and former Administrator of Federal Procurement Policy, and he writes about what you can learn from HHS. Steve, first of all, it's the first time, I think, in the history of In Depth with Francis Rose that we've said jujitsu on the air. So I'll take every opportunity I can to say that because it's fun to say.
It's sort of what I meant by using the phrase. I sort of came up with it while I was writing the blog called Procurement Jujitsu. I can hardly pronounce it myself.
Jujitsu.
Jujitsu.
There you go.
Is that in jiu-jitsu, as I understand, I wouldn't call myself an expert, you use the capabilities of your opponent to defeat your opponent. And so I was thinking of the procurement system as the customer's opponent. I think what Brian and the Buyers Club at HHS have done is use the capabilities of the procurement system and the regs to defeat the dysfunctional features of the system. That was the meaning of the term. It's a slightly obscure reference, I grant you.
You write, Fear the FAR, article about Brian, was an interesting phrase. The point was that the FAR provides more flexibility than many folks assume, and people need to learn to take advantage of the flexibilities. Now, Dan Gordon and Joe Jordan talked about that, two of your successors at OFPP. You talked about it when you were there. Various other administrators have talked about it, and a lot of other procurement people throughout government. Why are we still 10, 15, 20, 25 years on, trying to pound this message into people's heads that the FAR can be a flexible, malleable document and is it not intended to be rules that shackle you?
That's a very, very good question, Francis, as always. That's why I love coming on the show. You always ask such good questions.
Thank you.
And I don't have a definitive answer, but I think in general, a lot of times the best way to persuade people to do something new is to see either them or somebody else try it and have it work. So one of the things I most like about what the Buyers Club and Brian have done in this particular case that I wrote about in the blog is it's actually a real contract. This isn't a theory. This isn't there are these flexibilities, use them. They're doing a real contract for web services, and they used to do the procurement two real flexibilities that appear in the FAR. One is the advisory down select, where you can sort of take a larger number of people and very, very quickly sort of say, we're going to look at this group of finalists without very much effort. And the second flexibility they took advantage of is to pay people to do a prototype and then choose among real prototypes rather than proposals. Both those flexibilities exist. Both of them have been used, but they have not been used nearly enough. And so what excites me about what Brian and the folks at Health and Human Services and the Buyers Club have done is they are changing by example. Rather than preaching, rather than saying, oh, there are these flexibilities there, why don't you guys use them? They're using them, and that's very nice.
Let's walk through this because I think there's a lesson to learn here for people who are considering doing the kind of thing that Brian is doing, which is probably just about every agency at this point. You write, the first big effort was to choose a vendor to modernize the platform and infrastructure at the HHS Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluations, websites, databases, and software development environments. And you detail another part of this. And you write, these are exactly the kind of definable, moderate-scale jobs where there are lots of small and nimble and often inexpensive firms that fear entering the federal marketplace. And I underlined in red that word fear as I read through your post the first time. Yeah. I print them out and read them. I'm sorry. I'm not 21st century Steve. It's kind of hard. People get mad when I mark up the computer screen. At any rate, I underlined that word fear in red because I've heard that word used so much lately relative to small, potentially innovative companies that aren't currently doing business with the government about the way they approach potentially doing business with the government.
Right. I mean, this is a, particularly in the IT area, this is a huge challenge because there are, as we know just from, reading the media, these startups that are growing up everywhere, doing all sorts of apps with all sorts of talents and so forth. They are nimble, they're differentiated, and generally they're pretty inexpensive. All of those are great things from the government. My guess is, I'm not sure. And actually, I think it would. I'm actually thinking of trying to do a sort of research project. In fact, if anybody's listening and wants to support a small research project, send me an email, give me a call. Because you got these, you know, these White House innovation fellows who
yes.
are IT people. You have this group Code for America, which are kids who are trying to, you know, do coding in the, you know, software coding in the public interest. I would love to do some systematic. A lot of these people would like to sell to the government. I think very few of them currently are. I would like to do some systematic interviews with them to get a real feel for what they perceive the big barriers are. My instinct, but I'm not sure it's right or else I wouldn't need to do the research, is that an important part of it is actually some things that are in statute or executive order rather than procurement regulations, but they're still a problem. In fact, they're even worse because they're in statute. These various kinds of, you know, if you want to do business with the government, you have to have a special affirmative action plan that you don't have to have. If you don't do business with the government, you have Buy America. You have all of these, what are often procurement folks often call socioeconomic provisions,
mm-hmm.
contract clauses that these new businesses, which have, you know, are used to much simpler contracts. They don't see 152 clauses. And they take this thing to their lawyer, and the lawyer says, no, don't do it. This is, you know, too much risk, whatever. Bryant cannot solve that problem. The contracting officers cannot solve that problem because most of those things, unfortunately, are in statute and reg. I have suggested the idea, there's a version of this in a bill that's been introduced in Congress that I wish, if I knew you were going to ask me this, I would have remembered the name. I would have looked up the name of it. I want to give the bill a plug. I think it comes out of Senate, you know, Homeland Security and Gov Affairs. That bill would exempt, I think it's certain kinds of very small businesses or certain kinds of businesses from some of these special, quote-unquote, socioeconomic requirements. Another version would be to exempt any business for its first 10 jobs with the government. So it has a chance to get its feet wet before it needs to bring in all these lawyers and do all this special compliance.
Mm-hmm.
But my instinct is that the problem with these small garage firms and startups, if they're small enough, they're not subject to some of these. In fact, a lot of times, contracts under $250,000 are not subject, and that's a big plus. But I do think whether it's through exemptions, temporary or targeted exemptions from some of these statutory requirements, and or it's because of things that the Brian Civics and others who are looking for these flexibilities do to make the process more flexible, I think we in the government are really losing a lot by not having access to these people. Does anybody want to support the research? Let me repeat again. You know how to reach me.
You know how to do plugs, man.
Whatever.
You've got a promising career in advertising ahead of you, Dr. Kelman. We just have a couple of minutes left, and there are two important things that you point out here that I want to make sure people learn about and can go and refer to your blog if they want to learn more about them, because I think they're really important. You write, there are two unusual features of the HHS solicitation. The first was a use of a two-stage down-select process. You could participate by sending in some very simple material responding to the original RFP. 24 companies participated in that. And then the second was that they took five of them, gave them $10,000 apiece, the agency did, and had them develop a prototype of what they had proposed in the original process. Then they got to look at these five prototypes and figure out which one they wanted.
Right. That's a real plus. The government was looking at real stuff, not a paper proposal, not pie in the sky where they actually got real stuff. I think the government needs to do more of this. Now, there are some cost and financial issues, obviously. But I think you often will be able to save in the improved competition and actually get it, you know, the quality of what you're buying. More than what it would cost you to support, you know, give these people a stipend or whatever to develop a prototype.
And here's what I really want to call attention to, Steve. 6 weeks after publication of the RFP and with five prototypes in hand, HHS announced a winner, you write. That's a turnaround time that I think a lot of agencies would really be envious of.
Yes, and I think that the mixture of the down select, which means they went down from 24 people who were interested down to five finalists very quickly, almost no paperwork, was great. And then the fact they didn't have to evaluate these lengthy paper proposals. The five finalists gave them something. They gave them a prototype. That's much easier to evaluate than it is to evaluate these lengthy, word essay contests. So both those things together saved a lot of time.